right, Rossitron and SBT here on another CurseClick.com podcast. Ross, it's been far too long, hasn't it?
It has been. Unfortunately, the Cavs aren't playing anytime soon.
Well, this is the WSOP edition of the podcast. We're trying something new. It seemed like you became a little bit of a phenomenon of late with all your antics at the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas, Nevada over the past week. Cleveland.com picked up your piece and kind of followed you. Your Twitter was out there for everybody, even the very popular Cleveland blog, Waiting for Next Year, all about Ross out there in Vegas, doing it up with your buddies Norm Chad and the other dude, Lon, whatever his last name is. And yeah, this was big for you. Ross, welcome back.
Hey, man, thanks, for having me on the podcast. Yeah, people got into this WSOP thing. It was pretty cool. It was just unfortunate I lost the buy-in or whatever, but it was still pretty awesome, even knowing I lost $10,000.
All right, before we get into all that, just tell the people at home. I mean, I know that I'm kind of new into the poker world. I'm about 10 years late on this whole fad, but you got me very excited about it. We were following you every day. People were rooting for you. We knew in the end it was all going to come crashing down and there was going to be an upset Ross coming home empty-handed. We all knew that ahead of time. But tell everybody, how did you go about qualifying for this?
I play regularly on PokerStars and Full Tilt, and PokerStars has this really good, I guess, juicy program, if you will, called the Steps program. And step one costs as little as $7.50, and step six costs $2,100. And you work your way up through the steps. And I only bought into like step twos and step threes, and I pretty quickly, I probably spent like $300 total, or about $300, and I got a step six ticket, and I did my first step six, and I won it, and that gives you a 12K package for the World Series of Poker, including the buy-in and like expenses and stuff.
All right, so you went about qualifying, and I remember hearing from you when you did qualify, and you tried to break it down what basically the situation that you could have just pocketed cash, or you could do the one lifetime opportunity and actually go out to Vegas.
Yeah, I could have taken the whole 12. They put it in your account because by law in the United States, they don't let you, or they don't let PokerStars.com deal with the Rio or deal with casinos. So you have to buy into the tournament yourself. So they give you the option of taking the cash or playing. But I actually, you know, do play poker on the reg, and So I wanted to play. I've always wanted to play it since like Rounders came out and Chris Moneymaker won and stuff. And obviously you always watch it. Well, nobody, I do. I always watch it on TV. So I wanted to play. So I played.
And then you qualified.
Yeah. So I won that thing and I took the, whatever the package that they give you, and you're up like a PokerStars sponsored player. I get to wear their little patch, and they give me all kinds of bag full of clothes and crap like that. It's real cute.
Wait, is this
girls love that PokerStars.net stuff.
Well, wait, does this compromise your amateur status?
I didn't consider myself an amateur before this. I am a pro, Big Anthony.
All right, so you go out to Vegas. You kind of set the scene, what it is like there for those that haven't been there in a crazy weekend like this when the World Series of Poker is going on.
Well, there's been crazier weekends. I know NBA All-Star weekend like 3 years ago was this times like 20 probably. But, yeah, it's really crazy, and specifically over at the Palms and the Rio, it's insane. Like, people really love, you know, the ESPN, the drama and of all that, and the world champions. Yeah. Curtis Cleveland loves it. So, the Rio is insane. It's just crazy. So, like, celebrities obviously come out to play this tournament. It only costs $10,000. Not like you have to be a pro to play the tournament. All you need to do is buy in. And they do it up really, really, really big at the Rio and the Palms specifically. So.
All right, so you got there on what day?
I got there on Thursday, beginning of July, you know, Thursday of this, like first Thursday of this month.
And your first day to actually sit at a table and start losing your money was when?
It was that Sunday, which was day 1C. They have this tournament so big, like 6,500 people played it, that they split the day ones into 4 day ones because they can't fit 6,500 people in the Rio playing poker and have that many dealers. So I played on Sunday day 1C, And yeah, that's when I, so I didn't do anything before that.
So the minute you found out your assignment, your seating assignment, were you up online Googling names of the competitors at the table, kind of get a feel of who's there and who's experienced and who's not?
I did that before day two and day three, but you couldn't find that before day one. So I didn't know my table, so I just had to kind of get used to it in the first couple hours when I sat down. And unfortunately, it was an insanely hard, talented table. And but I got a lot of cards on day one, so day one went really, really well for me. And once that first table broke, I got a huge hand at my second. It was the second hand at my second table, but I even won chips at the first really, really hard table because I was able to get a lot of good hands.
Now, one of the guys you alerted to me, one of the online players, was actually interviewed on ESPN, recapping the day on ESPN.com. Mm-hmm. That's where the infamous Rossitron video that showed up on our website. You were center stage, and by center stage, I mean I think you snuck into the camera shot and then ran away promptly after the camera guy got upset at you.
No. What happened was, on the ESPN.com video, yeah, I got on ESPN like two or three times in this tournament, so obviously I'm really, really excited to watch that because I'm just weird like that. But I was sitting behind Jeffrey Lissandro's table on day one, and he won like three bracelets this year, and like in the poker community he's like big time celebrities, 2009 player of the year. So I got in that video sitting behind him with I guess some massive leg itch. I really think I just had some big things in my pockets, like a camera and a wallet and stuff like that. And then when he got all in when on the television broadcast, I definitely went and stood right behind him with the LeBron jersey. So, and I wanted to get on camera for sure. So I just stopped watching what was going on my table and went over to that table and made sure I got on camera, of course.
So wait a second. So you're there, you're playing, and the guy that was at your table was interviewed and was talking about what a difficult table it was. Just talk about that experience, because obviously you were very excited to get in there, do your thing, but you're looking around, seeing a lot of very, very noble adversaries at the table.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was really, really tough the first table, and I was really unlucky because one of the main reasons you want to play this tournament is so juicy, and as my man Verby would say, there's a lot of fishies. But unfortunately, this first table had guys that were more experienced or maybe even better than me and play higher stakes, including the guy that was sitting to my left, this like Asian-American kid. And this kid's won like over $5 million the last like two or three years online. And this kid's sitting two to my left, which is really, really tough for me. But the rest of the table itself was tough too, and he made reference to that. So, I don't know. I was really excited when that table broke and I got to go to a new table. And but, yeah, those guys were awesome.
In as non a boring way as you possibly can explain, what does it matter where guys are sitting on the table around you?
It's just because like after what they call the flop, guys get to act after you if they're to your left in general, which just gives them a positional advantage. Getting to act after you, they get to see what you do first. So,
all right. That was good.
That was probably boring.
No, that was fine. And wait, before we get to the other things, you were on the same day. You were playing the exact same day that Phil Hellmuth, I believe, entered the tournament, and you said there was a little bit of an entrance there.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only guy I know. I mean, it's like some guys, they follow some of these other sports like the UFC, and they know Chuck Liddell. Well, the Chuck Liddell of poker has got to be Phil Hellmuth. It's the only guy.
Yeah, and you're completely right. And it's funny because Chuck Liddell played this tournament, the main event of the World Series, last year and got seated at the same table as Phil Hellmuth for a little bit. But, everybody knows Phil Hellmuth. He came in like, a toga, like he was the, the king of Rome or something. I don't know, the king of Italy.
Wacky Hellmuth, you never know.
He came in a toga with, like, 40 or 50, like, hot chicks surrounding him. They didn't carry him in. I think in other years he's gotten carried in. But he just walked in with like all these chicks in togas, and he was in a toga. I think he had a crown on his head. And my table.
When he gets eliminated, did they carry him out? Like, because to the best of my knowledge, he's no longer playing in the poker. This guy's a douche, Ross.
Well, okay, yeah, I've heard he's a douche from a number of people, and that's fine. He is obviously really, really mean to the guys he plays with. But I don't know. Miguel Tejada. No, I don't know. I like Phil Hellmuth, but he's very mean to the guys he plays with. But he's fun. He makes the sport popular, so that's good.
So he is responsible. If there's no Phil Hellmuth, the World Series of Poker does not exist. Needs to find another job.
No, I would disagree with that. I would say Chris Moneymaker is more important to the popularity now than Hellmuth.
Can more normal people walking the streets, walking the strip of Vegas, will they be able to point out in a lineup Phil Hellmuth or Chris Moneymaker?
I don't know, it's probably about the same thing at this point. But Phil Hellmuth's a really tall guy. He's actually pretty tall. So probably maybe more of no Hellmuth because Moneymaker's about like our size, which is like midget status.
So he's a tall feller.
Yeah, he is.
Okay, so you're there. You're sitting at that table. You said there were some tough hands, but you came out and we were following your Twitter and you were doing well. It seemed like you had doubled your stack and then some.
Yeah, right. When I went to the second table, the second hand, I won like 40,000 chips, which at that point is a ton. I mean, it's really a lot. And at the end of day one, I finished with 92,000, which is well above the chip average, as they call it. And so day one went really, really well. It could have gone even better, but that first table was so tough that they just wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't budge. They wouldn't make any mistakes. The second table was pretty bad. But I probably could have ended the day if I had a worse first table with like 135, 140,000 chips. But I was still happy to have 92. Anybody would be really happy to have 92 after day one.
Annie Duke was eliminated on the opening day.
Daniel Negreanu, who I actually met at the PokerStars party and is like my favorite player, was eliminated early on day one as well.
So the PokerStars have a party. Like there's actual interaction between the quote-unquote PokerStars, and they are partying it up in Vegas.
Yeah, this party was the Thursday night. The second Thursday I was there. I had to play. Unfortunately, I had to play Friday, day three. It was unfortunate because in the end, I didn't make any money. But at the time, I would have gone to this party and just gotten just completely shit faced. But it was at Rain at the Palms, which is this unbelievable like 3-story nightclub with a dance floor and a stage, and has free alcohol, free food provided by PokerStars.net. I got like, and at this point, my friends had already left Las Vegas. And but they give you 5+1s. They give it like me, and I could bring 5 people. So I actually brought these like 4 just really hot chicks, and they were a ton of fun.
Yeah, and they weren't that expensive, right? I mean, you can find them in the corner on the strip.
No, yeah, I didn't have to pay for these girls, I swear. And it was a ton of fun. And these girls, and Nelly, and the thing about this party too is not only is it free drinks, an expensive nightclub, and free food.
But Nelly, you see that Nelly was the main attraction at this.
Nelly was the main attraction.
And what we know by now, everybody knows PokerStars real big with Nelly. They love Nelly. They can't get enough of him.
Yeah, and they sponsored him. Like Nelly played the $10,000 buy-in event with, and there was a bunch of other celebrities. Like I think one of your favorite NBA players, Jordan Farmar. George Costanza. Like so, there's obviously a bunch of the guys from Everybody Loves Raymond play it. And Nelly was played in the tournament. I think he busted in day one, but I'm not sure. He was performing at this party, and it was me and these chicks.
So wait, you're saying at a party you have a cross section of Everybody Loves Raymond fans and Nelly fans. Those two people have never been in the same room at the same time.
Well, not only that, but you get so many euros. Like, there's all these weird foreigners that smell really bad, and. It was so crazy because I just felt like all these like foreign D-bags were hitting on these chicks I was with. It was pretty funny, I thought. And I would have the best time ever if I could have gotten hammered, but I only did like 2 mixed drinks because I had to play on Friday. And then I just told the girls that like when Nelly got off stage, I'm like, all right, I got to go to bed. I got to play tomorrow. That kind of sucked. But the party itself was the best part. One of the best parties ever.
Performance. Are there any poker themes going on? Like, I can understand if maybe Lady Gaga was there. She might be able to bust up some songs that might be relevant to the topic at hand and what has united two people.
They definitely played Poker Face before Nelly came out. And Nelly, like, he screamed into the crowd, like, who's still in the main event? And then he's like, everybody give a motherfucking middle finger like, if you took a bad beat. And everybody did that. That's a bad beat. It's like, that's a poker term for getting unlucky. And, like, 2005 or 2006 world champion Joe Hashem, like, came out and introduced Nelly. But then beside that, he just went into playing most of his old stuff. He played, like, 2 songs from this new album he's got coming out in November, but it's pretty much all the old stuff, like Midwest Swang and all that.
Does Nelly have anything other than old stuff? I mean, he had to be playing stuff 10 years ago.
He was. Well, he played Party People with Fergie. I like that joint.
What about this one? I would have gone crazy. Oh, I would have dropped my panties for this song.
Oh, yeah. And me and these girls, like, we were first row. We high-fived him and his entourage, and they played – one of the funny things I thought was – they played Grills, and his entourage put in these fake unbelievably shiny, huge grills. So that was funny. But, yeah, Nelly was awesome. And what else? Yeah, and then at the party, me and one of the chicks, we got our picture with Humberto Brennis. And if you're a poker guy, you know, he had his little shark thing that, like, the shark eats people's chips and stuff.
So oh my God.
I definitely need to Facebook this girl just so I can see that picture.
So the girls are loving the WSOP weekend. They're all about it.
It's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I felt bad for them because they got hit on by a lot of, like, kind of trashy-looking Euros, but it was awesome.
And poker players wearing the number 23 LeBron jersey.
Well, I didn't put any Poker Stars shit on to go to the party, but the jersey itself, when I played, I wore it all 3 days, and my black mesh shorts and my LeBron J's. Nelly stepped on my J's. But that LeBron jersey was the most popular thing anybody was wearing that wasn't like a Phil Hellmuth type gimmick. It was I'm telling you, man, people that aren't like Laker fans from LA like love this whole Cavs journey type thing. So
I'm sure they do.
Yeah, there was even a dealer, like every dealer asked me if I'm actually from Cleveland, and like one of the dealers had been to Cheshelin twice, was from like I forget.
Ross, what you're not supposed to give out our secret locale, our meeting spot on the east side.
I meant Cleveland.
All right, so you got to be going to bed after that first night feeling pretty good about yourself. You know, you said you busted some – or you didn't do as well as you – look at me. I was trying to throw out some poker lingo. Got caught knowing I knew nothing about it. But you thought you could have had more money. You didn't maximize your potential. But you're still around, and that's the most important thing. You didn't have to go all in at any point. You didn't have to make any rash decisions, and you were still alive. You had to feel good.
Yeah, oh no, I felt great with 92, and everybody felt great because 92 is, you know, way more than a lot of people, and a lot of people are eliminated already at that point. But day two is in day three. There's where that Cleveland luck comes in a little bit.
So day two, we're following your Twitter, and we just see nonstop chip counts going down. That seemed to be the theme of the day.
Well, it was unfortunate, too, because I had cards in really good situations, and it was just I had pocket kings. I lost, which people pocket kings is the second best starting hand you can have in no limit hold'em, and I lost like 15,000 on that pot to a guy that, you know, should have folded before the flop, and then after the flop I did a really good job of keeping the pot as small as I kept it. And then the second big hand I played, I had pocket tens versus a guy who had like a queen three, all in before the flop for a 20,000 chip pot. And so I've got like a 70% chance to win that hand, maybe even more than that, 72, 75, I don't know. And the guy got lucky and hit a queen on the river. The river is some poker lingo.
Not the queen on the river.
The queen on the river, yeah. And then the other hand was just...
Should have paid me off on that.
It sounds
the
like
fuck
rounders.
Did you lay that down?
Why the fuck did you lay that down? Why? Why would
the
you?
Thing was I. The fuck did you lay that down for? Oh, look at the NL scared of Victor Martinez, but No, you know, there's no reason to lay that down. I had the best hand by far. The guy just got really lucky, and that's obviously a huge element of poker.
Straight up. Pay him.
Yes, well, that didn't happen.
Pay that man his money.
He did not beat me straight up.
They've got to reprise that role. I want to know more about Teddy Cagey. He didn't die at the end of that movie, did he?
Oh, they've got to come up with a documentary for what happens to him and his poker career in New York after that.
I would even watch a behind the scenes of him coming up with that accent because that would be high comedy.
Is that not being John Malkovich?
Who would not, right, exactly. Who would not want to see that? How has he not brought that back to other movies?
I don't know. He should have. But yeah, and then the other hand I lost was just another coin flip with queens versus ace king. I was probably like 57, 58% to win that hand. The guy ace on the river, and that was a 40,000 chip pot. And there's just nothing I can do about those spots. Like I have to get it in there with the ace king. It's perfect pot size. It's perfect hand for me. And so what can you do? I'm just unlucky.
All right, let's say you're sitting there with Pocket Casino. Walk me through this because I don't understand the whole bluffing thing. It seems like a crapshoot the entire time. But what if you're sitting there going, fold. I need you to fold. I need you to fold. Why don't you fold? You should fold. I've got a great hand. You should fold right now. Wouldn't the reverse psychology kind of go into play, and it's like the whole Princess Bride scene where he's like, I know that you know that I know that you know. And pretty soon,
that is a great scene.
It's going to cause your opponents, to have a meltdown.
Well, there's definitely spots for that, but I only had one of those kind of mental stepping chess match type spots, and that was kind of on day one. The rest of these spots that I play are all like pre-flop, and it's like a guy moves all in. That when the guy moves all in with ace king, I just look down at the pocket queens, and since there's so many hands that I have beat there, and the odds of him having ace ace are actually kind of slim there, because I don't know that he would play it that way. And he could have king king, but whatever. The odds are I've just got him beat, and a lot of times he's going to have ace king, and even then I'm a favorite, even though it's considered a coin flip. There's not really much of that before the flop. That kind of stuff happens after the flop. That happened to me on day one, and I might have actually gotten the worst of those situations on day one. Like, those guys might have been better with mm-hmm. the Inigo Montoya type deal than I was. So
yeah, I wish I don't have the bite. You killed my father.
Yeah, what's that?
You killed.
Yeah.
So you after day two, you walk home. You're angry. You're bitter. You're broken. You know your dream is coming to an abrupt end.
No, that's not true. I had 52,000 in chips. There are a lot of guys that are maybe still in the tournament right now. There's like 30 guys left in the tournament. There might be some of those 30 that had 52 or under starting day three.
All right, but really, you've outlasted how many in the field? Out of the 6,000 plus, how many are going to day three?
Out of the 6,500, there was like 2,000 or 1,900, there's 1,900 or 2,000 left to start day three.
So
I was still happy to be
alive.
Had you
done anything? I mean, I guess there were some of your critics, aka your friends, your best friends. We all got on the phone and we wanted to discuss your plight, and we wanted to talk about. I needed some reality, and I went to one of your buds. Podcasts. If you listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, he mentions his friends all the time. So let's just we'll throw out E. Fells and N. Lamarck's. They pretty much said Anthony, no, he's in trouble, and he hasn't taken any chances. I'm just putting it out there. This isn't a straw man. This is what was said.
Well, I took smart chances at pots that were good sizes for me, but yeah, I didn't take any huge chances on the first 2 days. But I wasn't, like I said, no, 52 going into day three is more than enough to still do damage. I just, on day three, I was not desperate to start the day. I did get desperate like 5 hours in, maybe 4 or 5 hours in, but I wasn't desperate to start the day. I just, once again, I got nothing. I felt like my table was easy on day three. Like, I was either the best guy or maybe the second best guy at my table. I just got nothing. And then when I got moved to another table, like five hands in, came the sad time music where I just lost a coin flip with ace queen versus pocket nines. And at that point, I had to get it in. And it was still like a 70,000 chip pot. So even if I win that hand, I'm still fine. But I was just very unlucky. The four biggest hands I played in the tournament, like that were propositions, like the hand wasn't over yet, I lost the hands. Like, I got unlucky. So that's a big part of it. I play thousands of tournaments on the internet. Well, any given one tournament, most important thing is going to be luck, and I kind of ran bad. I'm the man, Anthony. Come on, I'm the man.
So, just tell me the exact, the specific details of that last hand.
The specific details of the last hand were this new guy who's like 55-year-old dude. I didn't know anything about him. He had just got moved to the table just like me. He raised from the big blinds 2,000 to 5,000. He had about like 70 or 75. Five chips to start the hand. The table folded really, really quickly. The seven guys behind him, which makes me feel like when I look down at the ace queen, like my cards are still live. That doesn't necessarily mean that, but it's a tiny hint. So I thought about it for a while, and I wondered if I could make him fold. I thought about it for like a minute to 90 seconds, and I wondered if I could make him fold for what was going to be about 29,000 more, because I had about 34 to start the hand. And so I thought about it for a minute and a half. I got his chip count to see how much it would kill him if he called and lost the hand. And in the end, I decided to move all in because I can't really be folding ace queens at that point. I've only got like 17 times the big blind, so I am starting to get desperate. And so I could have just called and seen the flop, but that's not really.
Wait,
that's
by the way, really real quick, desperate. I mean, if anybody knows desperate, it's you.
Oh,
I'm just saying. Well, from in your mindset, this is a place you've been before. You should be comfortable there. We a lot of us thought exactly. Maybe Ross building his way back up from the bottom is exactly the role you're comfortable exactly. In.
I'm very, very used to those desperate spots actually in poker and maybe in some other things. And but so I moved it all in, and this 55-year-old dude, I think he was about 55. He didn't even think about it. He just called immediately with pocket nines. He didn't worry about what I had at all. So that's a genuine coin flip. I'm like 50% to win the hand, 50% to get eliminated. And, you know, the flop came king 9-4, and it was 5-5 time for LeBron James.
But now, wait a second. Not had he – how many chips did he have in comparatively to what he had?
He had 5,000 in, and he had about 70,000 – 65 or 70,000 left that if he would have folded, he could have saved – like he could have saved 29 of his remaining, like, 65. And it's fine that he called. I don't like the fact that he didn't think about it before he called. That's fine that he called. And he just won a coin flip. Like I said, just unlucky
is
again.
It, that Bush League so. Etiquette right there, he should have thought about a little more. There's some sour grapes
well,
after
I
the
just
fact.
Think in a $10,000 main event of the World Series, I think you should pretty much think about your big decisions.
Well, maybe that was your problem. Maybe you needed to react and let your instincts come into play a little bit more. I'm just saying what some of the critics, the outspoken critics – of your poker talent and your strategy. Look.
Well, I'll have to silence them next year, Anthony.
You're going to enter the big tournament. You got to expect to feel the fire and feel the pressure coming from those that love you. You know, it's like Jim Tressel. We all love Jim Tressel, but
the thing about it, I'll tell you this, is my family is not eating. They were depending on me to come home with some money, and now they're poor. And my mom and my grandma, that we don't have money to put her in a home. my little baby brother, he hasn't eaten a meal in 3 weeks.
Had he all the way from Las Vegas, I think you had to adjust your flight even because you had expected to leave at some point earlier on Friday. But you stuck around. You made a lot of people proud. People, like I said, following your adventure. You did have some cool stories that you had relayed partially to me throughout the week.
None of them have to do with a prostitute, but yeah, that's true.
No, but when we say Rossitron came home empty-handed, we mean it in more ways than one. But seriously, Ross, what were some of the celebrities that you noticed and you might have mingled with throughout the week?
I would say, you know, I met in terms of, like, I just shook hands with, like, Negreanu, Humberto Brenes, and Jeffrey Lissandro. But the coolest little – oh, yeah, and Scotty Wynn as well. I met Scotty Wynn, baby. But the best thing was Norm Chad came by my table. When he had come by, like, 5 times, and I was just too busy or too focused to say.
That's the theme again. That's all I have for Norm Chad. He doesn't have a catchphrase,
does he? That's fine. Yeah. No.
Does Norm Chad have a catchphrase? By the way, Norm Chad –
all he does is joke about his divorces.
Well, some people think that's gotten a little old throughout the years.
Yeah.
I still think he's the guy that pioneered, at least over the last 20 years, pioneered humor in sports journalism.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He came over by me, and I just said, "Hey, Mr. Chad, how you doing?" And he comes over, and he shakes my hand, and he starts, and he asks, he sees LeBron James. He's like, "Are you from Cleveland?" I'm like, "I'm proud to say I am." And
two of my ex-wives are from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's always working on those one-liners. And then he asked me how I'm doing in chips. I'm like, I'm a little bit short. I've got like 45 or 50. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. You get some more. He's like, and he asked me my name. He's like, what do you do for a living? And I pointed at the table. And he's like, just online. I'm like, yeah. And then he was like, what did he say? He's like, well, can you do this forever? And I told him, you know, graduated law school, passed the bar. And he's like, where'd you go? And I said, Cleveland Marshall. Tim Russert went there. And he just goes, oh, well, he put his degree to use. And that was the end of it.
Yeah, by dying of a heart attack.
Another dead joke with the Steve McNair and Mr. Chubb's things.
So wait, so you're talking to Norm Chad. Are you in awe? I mean, it seems like poker, you wouldn't get in awe of any of the personalities there. But, I mean, Norm Chad, a very accomplished columnist. Everybody knows.
Well, that was the thing. well, the funny thing about it was I said I'm actually a big fan. He goes, I said I am from Cleveland. I read The Plain Dealer, and they insert your stuff in The Plain Dealer actually once every while. And he's like, oh, you read? Nobody reads. I go, oh, well, I mean, I read it online nowadays. He goes, oh, yeah, I mean, nobody reads anything in general. Print is dying.
No.
Oh, and I didn't drop Curse Cleveland's name. You'll be mad at me for that.
Oh, thank goodness. Site's not ready yet, Ross. We're still tweaking. We're still. It's been a constant process. We're tweaking.
But yeah. So he knew. He knew that. You know. Nobody. He felt like nobody reads The Plain Dealer. Nobody reads any print anymore. But I wasn't in awe. I just enjoyed the conversation.
So it's just you rapping with a media legend, a media mo.
Yeah. Exactly. I should have told him I'm a huge fan of when you do the 5 good minutes on PTI, but I didn't.
What about did he conclude everything with pay the man surely? Was there any of that?
No, he just said good luck and you'll get some chips. Don't worry about it. He was really, really nice, man.
Maybe a stupid question. Here's a stupid question. You guys are all sitting there. There's chips in front of everybody. Has anybody ever stolen chips at the World Series of Poker tournament?
I'm sure it's happened, but they're obviously pretty strict about watching for it, and I wouldn't even dare think about it. But yeah, I'm sure it's happened in past years.
It'd almost be worth it to get caught doing that. I mean, you could make quite a scene leaving the casino.
That's true, especially if like the ESPN cameras were around. And the last thing about the trip was I just was too busy, or he was too busy. I could never find the time, but he was right by me. It was Jason Alexander. George Costanza, who, of course, outlasted me in the tournament, so he must be much better at poker than me.
Mr. Vandalay, of course.
That's Art Vandalay.
Vandalay himself, doing well. He was doing well this weekend, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He was sitting like 20 feet from me, and I just wanted to go over there. And that's another time the LeBron jersey might have gotten on ESPN because I was pretty close to his table. But he did really well. He did better than me. But he's played. This is not the first year he's played this. He plays this like every year. He's a big poker guy.
Yeah, but he had a huge chip count. What happened to that?
Well, I went over by his table, and he won his biggest pot. It was a little thing called Pocket Aces versus Pocket Queens. And it didn't look like his opponent was a veteran or a regular, because the day when I was trying to say I had big hands, I had pocket aces versus pocket queens, but I didn't win a monster pot. I just won kind of like an average pot. But he won a monstrous pot on that hand, so that's how he got a ton of
chips. Was eventually eliminated.
Oh, yeah, he's not going to win it. The Phil Ivey's obviously going to win it. I don't even know what I think about Phil Ivey anymore, because all the girls I know have crushes on him, and I used to have a crush on him, but now I think I'm just jealous.
All right, in a Jay Billis draft night way, kind of break down Phil Ivey, why he's still around, and the potential of him making it through this tournament when they go back in November.
The potential is pretty good. He's like second or third in chips right now of like about 27 left. Obviously, 9 make the final table, so he's only got to outlast 18 more guys. And what makes him so good, I don't know, a combination of just the way his mind works and his experience and the fact that he's better than almost everybody else at knowing what opponents have. Like, people think Daniel Negreanu is the best at that. Phil Ivey has to be the best at kind of knowing what opponents have based on the way they've played in the past and the way they've played the current hand and, you know, how he can exploit what they'll do with those types of hands. He's just got to be the best at knowing what his opponents have.
So, Ross, overall, for those that have never even thought about entering something like this, the big tournament, you cost yourself a little money, obviously. You could have made a little more money by not going to the tournament, correct? Okay.
That's
so
correct.
You put it on the line.
But, you only live once.
It's a life experience. Right? What are you going to try to do to get back there? I mean, is this something that you feel that you need to get back?
I will definitely try and qualify through PokerStars, if only for the Nelly party with hot chicks. But yeah, I don't know. Next year, come the month or two before the main event when the Cavs are choking in the playoffs again, I think I will just pop onto PokerStars and do the tournaments that I do.
Is there what would you say the odds for you? For those that don't know, Ross is very modest. Guy has like 9 poker tables up at once at all times. No matter where he is, as long as he has internet access, he's in good shape. What are the odds that you could actually get in the money? And explain to people real briefly what getting in the money is for those that don't know.
Getting in the money is the top 10% of the field. So like 6,500 people enter this tournament, 650 are in the money and get paid. And like if you come like 648th, you'll just over double your money. You would have won like $21,500 this year. And I would say the chance, if I play the tournament five times, I expect to cash one, at least once. I do, because my style is very patient, nitty Jew style. Sometimes people like to make fun of the Jewish folk for being kind of tight with their money. I think I kind of play poker that way.
Do you think you would cash out? Do you think 20% of the time you're cashing out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely think 10% of the field cashes, I think I could cash it 20% of the time. So don't laugh at that. I'll be back. And we'll see what happens.
You will be back, and then we'll have more things to post. We had nothing on Curse Cleveland. I mean, you pretty much took us on a ride, Ross. We'll all remember where we were when Ross was
well,
in Vegas.
Next year we'll prepare a little bit better.
It'll is there more preparation to be done? I mean, don't you know everything there is to know about
poker?
Yeah,
sure.
So what else?
No, I'm not talking about me and my poker. I'm just talking about, like, the park, getting more people out there. And, you know, a lot of people bring – I only had a few guys and then those girls from Ohio out, but it was kind of a my deal. Like, I wanted to do it for myself. But I'll try and plan a party around it in future years.
This is like going to the Super Bowl and having, like, Cromartie need to get his 50 kids tickets to get into the game. Like – you need to find a way to get everybody out to Vegas. There's a lot of pressure there.
Oh, yeah. If at some point in the next 10 years I can get to the final 100, I will fly all of us West G and NDCL people out. Not Shard, but West Geauga and NDCL people for sure.
The Shard excluded from the World Series of Poker.
All right, my dog.
All right, man. Good job. I think that was quality. I think you provided a much-needed window into this whole thing. Not a lot of people know. Well, what am I saying? I think I'm one of the few that don't know what's going on. Nonstop poker on four different ESPN channels, and even Fox Sports has gotten in to the game. I think even Spike was doing poker at one point.
Oh, NBC too. NBC.
And here we are, 10 years later.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks.
First Cleveland. Look at you. What are you in a
Go
rush?
Go Cavs. Go
That's
Cavs.
It. All right, man. Congratulations.
Yes, I am. I just want to say that LeBron jersey will be born every year.
And by the way, thanks Sam Amico, the big-time NBA columnist.
Remix!
No, let's get to this real quick for those that stuck around. Sam Amico was supposed to be a podcast guest. Sam Amico is in this rivalry with Brian Windhorst. Look, everybody knows it. Everybody knows what's going on here. These two are dueling for Cavs stories. And this was Sam Amico's opportunity to come on to Curse Cleveland and get his side of the story out. And what'd he do? He ignored us. It's an outrage.
Of course. Of all course.
Right. We'll get you next time.
All of our stuff is better than his, including that Steve McNair piece.
No, we're not talking about Anthony Parker either. We're supposed to get excited about this. All right. Until next
joking.
Time, thanks once again for tuning in. You've been
all right,
locked
hey,
in.
Danny Ferry, get Matt Barnes.
CurseCleveland.com.
Get Matt Barnes, Danny Ferry.